Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. The Score. And 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Yeah, I would say the drops. Sometimes I rush my drop a little bit, you know, not needing to. You know, one specific route that that I can think of is Rome when he was, or I think it was a 10-yard route right over the ball, and I rushed my drop, and then you know, tried to juice it in there a little bit and missed. You know, I didn't need to. Just trying to hurry up and get the ball to him. Getting his hands fast as possible so he can, you know, make magic and do what he does. And so, you know, just making sure, you know, trusting the drop, trusting the reads and things like that, and getting through them. You know, I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that I'm focused on. And then, you know, my finishes on my play fakes or anything like that.
One thing I really like about Caleb Williams is both his ability to understand what he needs to improve and his willingness to discuss it. And there are a lot of athletes who don't want to and who want to say, well, that's what we'll talk about that. My coaches and I have talked about that, but he lets us in a little bit. And I think it's a great way to develop a relationship with the fans and say, all right, kid, good luck. Figure it out. And to let us see what he thinks he needs to work on.
Here's my question on that. Do we believe that is the modern day media coaching that has helped him get to that point where he can be a little bit more sherry, if you will? Because, you know, these people now that play sports at the high school level, especially at the college level, they get so much media training that did not exist, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
I think that's part of it. I think the other aspect is, maybe football is becoming a little bit more like basketball in that one of the reasons I love basketball and I love basketball commentary is everything's right in front of you. And if a guy dribbles a ball off his foot, if a guy dribbles into traffic, if a guy takes a three when you need it to, so much of basketball isn't arcane and doesn't get subsumed under an avalanche of jargon. And basketball, where a coach will say, we didn't rebound. Or a coach will say, we're not defending anybody. Our defense stinks. And I love that about it. And I also think there's an aspect in golf that's similar, where everybody sees everything. Everyone knows what goes wrong. That's a bad shot. That's a bad club selection. I think quarterbacking, as complicated as it is, that he has been raised by quarterbacks coaches forever. And I think more so, and we get a lot of it in what we do,
right.
We have access to the quarterbacking industrial complex now in a way that whether he says it or not, Tim Jenkins or Kurt Warner.
Right. There's enough former quarterbacks who are talking and letting us in.
JT O'Sullivan or Dan Orlovsky is going to have that clicker and he's going to say he rushed his drop. So,
and it's not like you necessarily have to go to legacy media to find the stuff out now. You could just go on social media, somebody's YouTube page, and they can cleanly explain to you what happened, why it happened,
yes,
how it happened, and what needs to happen differently so that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
I completely understand that. Because you're right. In basketball, it's so, like, as you said in front of you, we all play or have watched enough basketball to understand, hey, you can't make that pass in that situation. Why did you throw it into the post that way as opposed to a bounce pass, a lob, whatever? It's very simplistic. With quarterbacking, with football in general, there's so much going on over the course of one play with 11 guys on one side and 11 guys on one side doing different things to make the play work or to blow the play up. But quarterbacking is like one position, and then you can kind of take the what's going on right next to it and what might affect that. But you're right. We're getting more insight into quarterbacking than we've ever gotten,
and
ever.
Don't get me wrong. It remains complicated.
Oh, yeah, it's complicated.
And part of it is this industry needs it to be complicated, so some of these coaches have value. When you're talking about, you know, your back leg is here and your first hitch is here and you are reading the X receiver here before you pivot this way and look the safety over to this zone or that zone. So it is complicated, but for a rookie quarterback to feel confident enough to say, I rushed some of my drops, and it made me try to juice a ball in there that I wouldn't otherwise throw, because he knows someone else might notice that, and maybe that'll be coached out of it. I hope it's not. I hope they let him be that guy and live that life, because I think it's great. I think it really does help keep fans on your side when people get to watch you grow and just root for you to get past some of these mistakes.
Transparency is very tricky and nuanced in any sport, but authenticity, that shines through regardless. Everyone loves something authentic, whether they love you or hate you. If they're authentic, they're going to give you way more grace in both the mistakes that you make and when you don't bring it on a particular Sunday.
That's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein here on the Bernstein and Holmes Show, this segment of which is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. So this is the time of the week where opposing teams say nice things about opposing teams, and it's the first time some opponents have gotten the opportunity at the NFL level to talk about Caleb Williams. Here is what Texans coach DeMeco Ryans had to say.
Bears, what I see offensively is starting with the quarterback, with Caleb, exciting player to watch. Strong arm, like the guy can move around the pocket, scramble in to throw. Like you have to stay on your coverage, right? Because he's going to find someone downfield. So we have to be on the details there when it comes to him moving around in the pocket and just their running game. I think that's where everything starts. They do a good job of their zone scheme, right? Getting Swift going on the outside. We have to do a great job in the run game. And then they have playmakers on the outside. Keenan Allen, all right, DJ Moore, two big-time playmakers who've done it for a while in this league. Guys, we have to be aware of where they are in all situations, and we have to make sure we're as sticky as possible in coverage versus them.
Pretty standard stuff, and I hope Keenan Allen's okay because he didn't practice yesterday with this ongoing heel injury. I don't really like the way they've talked about it.
It's because they tried to soften the blow by saying, you know, it's something he's dealing with. He's, you know, going to be, but we're now in the regular season.
They said it was a cleat issue, remember?
Yeah, but
it's a heel injury.
The way the cleat affects his heel. How about that?
It's a heel injury. His heel hurts, and he wears cleats for a living.
And so, obviously, there's so many different things you can put inside of a cleat to alleviate some of that. But once your pain is beyond that, that's problematic. And it doesn't sound like something that's going to be week to week. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like something where he's going to need to either rest it or do something. Like, being on it is going to aggravate it. And you might feel good enough to go, if you will. But if you're not at top flight, fully healed, it's a bad time in the season to be dealing with week-to-week stuff or day-to-day stuff.
Because it's a 32-year-old wideout.
It's the beginning of the season. If this was week 15, we'd probably all feel a bit different about it. But I think most of us are saying, hey, get him right and then get him back on the field, not try to navigate your way through a gimpy player.
Well, I don't know that that's how they think of it, because usually with veterans who say, I'm good, when the game
they
starts,
trust the veteran.
I'm good. We talked to Jim Miller about it, the former Bears quarterback who played with the Seattle Seahawks, and he brought up John L. Williams. And he said John L. Williams would look old in practice all week. And then the moment the lights went out of the game started, he was himself. And that's great. And that works for a while, and you probably remember that because it stands out as an outlier. And the truth is, the history of 32-year-old wide receivers is not great. And that is often the defining age when you start to not be what you were. And that's, what, $23 million? Is that the number for Keenan Allen?
It's a big number.
Okay.
It's not a small number.
No, I think it's that. And there's value to having the vet, there's with the experience, what it does for a young quarterback.
But and it's a contract year too. So if he's trying to get more money, he's going to try to play through it. But if you're ineffective or you actually get hurt, like if you limp off the field during a game, that's a different thing than, oh, he looks old in practice. He had to leave the game.
C.J. Stroud was also asked what he thinks of the Bears and his counterpart going into this game.
I really didn't get to watch much of him. I just watched the defense, but he's definitely a playmaker, somebody who can extend plays and, you know, make all the cool throws. tough player, take hits, and really talented. So, you know, I definitely do think that he has great things coming in his career. And I definitely do think, like, he'll get his rhythm going. And, you know, it takes time. It's not something that doesn't happen overnight. You can see in every quarterback this week, I think, except for probably Baker Mayfield, who looked really good. Everybody's kind of rusty, trying to just, you know, get those kinks out and get that rust away. And I think quarterback play will start picking up week two, week three, week four, just like every year. So I definitely think he'll get his rhythm.
Now, that's interesting because Caleb mentioned the same thing. And again, this is another case where there's no secrets. Quarterbacking was bad for the most part around the league. And everybody's sort of saying, well, maybe it's getting the kinks out. The larger question is, are defenses just better? Are defenses more ready now for some of what's coming?
I think it's a combination. Defenses are ready, first of all. But also, you know, preseason's shorter than it used to be. And people are not trying to play in the preseason. Teams, front offices, coaches, they're not trying to play their players in the preseason that they don't feel like need to prove something. If you know what you have, you'll go in with a little rust in week one as opposed to risking, I guess, injury in the preseason. It's interesting to me because when you say our defense is better, I can tell you one thing. The individuals on the defenses, faster, stronger than they've ever been before. Better technique than they've ever been before. Coached up as well as they have been in the history of the game. It's the evolution of the game, right? You know, offense takes a little bit of a leap. I mean, there's a reason it's a passing league now instead of a running league. There's a reason you can't touch the quarterback anymore. I think the answer to your question is yes, defenses are better, but I do think quarterback play will improve. It can't be this bad, Dan, because week one was bad.
We're going to get to a little bit later on in the show because Caleb Williams also had some things to say about that, and I'm not sure how young quarterbacks are being helped in their development by having it explained to them that it's okay for things to be taking time. I don't remember it ever being okay before. I don't remember NFL teams like, you don't have to be good yet. It's okay. No one else is good. It's okay.
I mean, some quarterbacks don't even play their rookie season, right? And so, you know, you look at Michael Penix, I guess J.J. McCarthy was going to play, but he's not anymore. So there's always been that two ways of thinking, play now or they should watch. We saw Patrick Mahomes. It worked out pretty well for him not having to play immediately.
Yeah, he's a unicorn.
But he is a unicorn.
I can't use
him. You talked about outliers earlier. Yeah. Like he's one of one.
But we do know also, look, Bobby Slowick. And it's still weird for me because I was around his father when he was a Bears defensive backs coach. And Bobby did such a good job incorporating familiar Ohio State concepts.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's pure terminology. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't have the plays in front of me and what they're labeled and what the positions are called. But if Shane Waldron would consider saying, hey, Caleb, what do you want to do that Lincoln Riley did? How can I communicate with you in games in a way that Lincoln Riley did? Is there a playbook of developing Stroud from which Waldron could learn from Slowick? I don't know. I wouldn't think there's a downside unless collegiate plays are easier to sniff out, unless some of these collegiate plays are easier to defend. But we know there's been a commingling where we used to be able to watch pro offense versus college offense because of how quickly information is disseminated, how rather than literally snail mailing film to people, everything is instantly available all the time. You've got junior high-level teams, you've got 7-on-7 teams or whatever it is in Texas now running the same stuff they see the night before on Sunday Night Football.
It's kind of crazy how that works. Everything just flows together now, and there are no barriers, which can be good and bad depending on what we're talking about, to information. Information is everywhere. So I think with the Slowick thing, and the only thing I worry about with Caleb and what you just proposed is maybe too much information too quickly.
Maybe.
That's the only thing, the downside to that.
But I know he's got agency, and he would say, hey, give me this play every once in a while, or call it this. Let me remember it that way and get in my comfort zone a little bit. From everything we know about Shane Waldron not being Luke Getsy, the part of the reason why Getsy's not here and Waldron is because of the expectation of some flexibility.
You just reminded me I watched Luke Getsy's offense in week one.
Did you throw up?
Yeah, I didn't need to throw. I just You're going up against. No, it wasn't good.
Watching Gardner Minshew operate the Luke Getsy offense isn't your idea of a well spent football afternoon.
It was the game that was on in the late window. I was like, let's just see what happens, and it was predictable.
Before Chicago takes on Houston, tune in Sunday evening from 5:30 to 7:20 after the Cubs game for the local Ford dealers pregame show here on 670 The Score. It's presented by Busey Bank and Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. They'll get you set for the game. Then, immediately following the game, Mark Grody will join Olin and Manley with instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. And I was joking before about our fabulous little stress ball footballs here, which are awesome. There's real footballs over there, and there were real people throwing real footballs
at real targets.
So we're gonna have a day here at Prue because Circa Sports Illinois is teaming up with us, The Score, to celebrate the start of football season. Food trucks, these games, and more throughout the day. Circa Sports is going to have merch for you when you come and download the app and deposit. We've got plenty more to come. Let's do a quick check-in with where the fading Chicago Cubs stand after a valiant comeback fell short last night. We got a lot more to come today here on Sports Radio 670, The Score.